It's time for From the Short Grass with Trey Shapp, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Short Grass is brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. And by Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Short Grass, here is your host, Trey Shapp.
Happy New Year, and welcome to another edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Shapp. Did you get a chance to listen to last week's episode with part one of my interview with Fred Perpall, the president of the United States Golf Association? I hope you were able to listen and get a chance to hear what a talented and engaging person he is. I believe the USGA board is in great hands with him leading them. In this episode, you will hear part two of my interview with Mr. Perpall that I recorded from his office, where he is the chief executive officer of the Beck Group in Dallas, Texas. Before we get to that, I want to take some time to congratulate the four inductees into the Arkansas State Golf Association Hall of Fame. The class is led by former Augusta National Golf Club Vice Chairman Mr. Joe Ford. He will be joined by former LPGA member Audra Burks, award-winning golf course architect Tom Clark, and former PGA Tour member Ron Whitaker. The class will be inducted at a date and location that is to be determined. We will let you know when a decision has been made on this in an upcoming episode. Also coming in 2024 is the Simmons Bank Championship to Pleasant Valley Country Club, October the 21st through the 27th. It will be the second round of the PGA Tour Champions playoff, so you know the best PGA Tour Champions golfers will descend on Little Rock. Ticket prices, volunteer opportunities, and more information will be announced soon, and I will have all of that information for you when it becomes available. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels is the leader in hotel property management. Matthew and Blair Allen know how to manage hotel properties. When you are in need of an overnight place to stay, make sure it is a Beachwood Pinnacle managed property. How do you do that? Go to their website, bphotels.com, for more information. We are back after this with part two of my interview with the president of the United States Golf Association, Fred Perpall. Stay with us.
At Stevens, our philosophy is to invest every dollar as if it were our own, to seize opportunity, to anticipate rather than react, to deliver constant focus in an ever-changing world, and to pursue the objectives of our clients in order to help them reach their financial goals. A proven history of helping companies and individuals. Stevens, member NYSE SIPC.
Traveling to Fayetteville to watch a game? Forgot to book a room for the night? Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group has you covered. Stay where the fans stay. Staybridge Suites is just south of Baum Walker Stadium and is an all-suite hotel within walking distance of Baum Walker, Bud Walton, and Razorback Stadium. Or you could stay at the Comfort Inn and Suites with newly remodeled rooms throughout the entire property. Find them on the web at bphotels.com. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Short Grass. I honestly didn't know what to expect when I finally had the opportunity to sit down with the president of the United States Golf Association, Mr. Fred Perpall. I could not have been more pleased in how the interview went. If you listen to part one, you know how engaging and energetic Fred is. Well, buckle up, because it is only going to get better with part two. On the tee, the president of the United States Golf Association, Fred Perpall.
How has playing golf and being around the game now helped you in business?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so funny, you know, the interaction between business and golf. I think all of us know people that sort of hang around the hoop because of what golf can do for you. And I think if you approach golf and you say, boy, this is going to be my ticket in, this is going to be my tool for business, it doesn't really work, because people can kind of feel it. they can sense it, like when you're all in and when you're all in for the right reason. But there's no doubt that I think we as businessmen always are looking for opportunities to test our skills, to control our emotion, like self-control is a thing, to see the reward from hard work. You know, all of these skills kind of translate in business, right? The ability to interact, to compete fairly, to actually act with integrity. Like golf gives you all these lessons in your life that actually are transferable in business. Golf also gives you the, you know, the greatest relationships for the right reason. And I think leadership today in any form in America is very lonely. It's a lonely thing to be a leader. If you are the CEO of a company, or maybe you're managing a division of a, you know, company, or maybe you have a small business, you know that there are times where you have to call the balls and strike that no one is going to walk through the door and help you with. So leadership and to lead today in America is a very lonely thing. And I think golf gives you proximity to other leaders who are also, you know, going through that same experience. It gives you the intimacy to truly connect. Everything that's different about us and our background fades away in the game of golf. In golf, we become this wonderful community, and it's a community of golfers. And I think for me, probably the most helpful part about golf in my career, it's made leading less lonely. It's given me the access to great friends. It's given me like a personal board of advisors, people that can mentor me. Like, look, when you grow up in an inner city environment and you don't have family members that can teach you certain things, like your golf friends become proxy for that, right? So golf has made my business life much easier because who golf has put me with. And we didn't do that. You know, we didn't get involved with golf for that reason, but it is something that the game gives back to you. And I'm very proud to say that, you know, many of my best golf friends are also my best friends.
That's awesome. That is really awesome. What does it mean to you when I say President of the United States Golf Association?
Wow. It's still an awesome, you know, sort of feeling to be trusted with that responsibility. When I hear that title, I don't think about myself. You know, I think about the men and women before me that actually paid a great price in terms of sacrifice of their time and their effort to actually steward the USGA. I inherited a USGA that was in fantastic shape. You know, my predecessor, Stu Francis, who also has become one of my great mentors and great friends, was just a wonderful role model to me about what it meant to be president, to be humble, to think more about the people around you, to give of your time with not the expectation of anything in return, to serve this game because this game and through this game you can serve others, to think about what's good for all of golf and not any particular piece of golf, and to wake up every day hoping that we can make this game better for our children's children. And that's what being a leader of the USGA means to me. It means we have the unique responsibility, along with the RNA, to govern the game of golf. And that means we need to wake up every day thinking, how can we make golf better? How can we make it more sustainable? And to think about the entire game of golf and only doing what's right for the entire game. And that's a big responsibility, but it's also really cool.
Where do you see the United States Golf Association? 5 years? 10 years? 25 years?
Yeah.
Obviously, you found it in a great spot, and you're growing off of how you found it. But where do you see it in the future?
The USGA has always been a leading force in what's good for the game of golf. And clearly today in our country, you know, we have a responsibility as the United States Golf Association to make sure golf is available to all of us who live in the United States. And so in addition to continuing conducting elite championships, in addition to thinking about the long term of the game, in addition to preserving the history of the game, in addition to investing, making deep investment in the sustainability through our green section, in turf research, and all that is good. You know, by the way, most of your listeners probably in their front grass, there is a, you know, strain of grass that was developed and researched and supported by the USGA. Almost the last four Super Bowls are being played on USGA research turf. So when we make these investments in the game across all of these things, we're not only investing in a better game of golf, but we hopefully investing in a better life for Americans. And increasingly that's come to mean that in the game of golf, we find a refuge. We find a place to connect. We find a place where all Americans can connect. And I hope that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, the USGA will be perceived, as it always has, as being good for the overall game of golf, but increasingly being a leading advocate and force for including more people in the game of golf. And not because we love the game of golf. We do love the game of golf, but also because what golf makes out of your life and who it makes you into. And Donald Ross said it best, whenever a people gets serious about their golf, then that people no longer have to worry about its integrity. And we know through golf, you become not only a better member of your community, you become an addition, more additive to your community. And so we hope that that becomes a big part of the future of the USGA.
And I can tell you're very serious about the game.
Yeah, well, you know, the game of golf changed my life. And, you know, admittedly, when I came to golf, like many young people, you know, I probably was thinking about what I can get from this game. Like, oh boy, this game will help me connect in my community. It'll help me connect and meet people. I came to golf because it's an individual sport, thinking about what I could get from golf. And then I met all these beautiful people along the way. And they showed me what I could give back to the world through golf. And that's been the part of the game that's most serious. I love to play. My wife always jokes, and my wife Abby always jokes, that I play golf 8 days a week.
Hey, if I could get away with it, I would too.
My business partners probably feel like I've put a lot of energy into the USGA, but I also would tell you that the better, you know, my life in golf has become, the better my overall life has become. And so I feel like I've been better for my family. I've been better for my partners and colleagues at BEC. And I've been better for my community because I am a golfer. And I think that's something I feel very strongly about. And it's not just me. I think everyone who is living the golf life would also probably attest to that.
The state of the game of golf, where is it right now? Is it in a good place?
Yeah, I mean, by any stretch of the imagination, golf is in an extraordinary place. You know, I think, you know, one of the things I always like to say to people, before COVID, golf was becoming, you know, older and less diverse. The rounds were kind of flat. This is according to the National Golf Foundation, but fewer and fewer people were playing golf. Certainly fewer people were entering golf. So golf was sort of on a slight decline prior to COVID. And then our lives got shut down, and we were longing for places to connect. We were longing for, you know, recreation outdoors. And a bunch of people found golf who otherwise may not have found golf. And the good news about those people who showed up, they are actually the people we had been looking for. They were young people. They were minorities. They were 50% young minorities and women. 50% of the people that showed up were the exact people we were looking for. And a lot of people returned to the game too. And so, you know, golf has gone through an explosion since COVID, and I think Top Golf and having a more casual way to experience golf has helped. But all these new people that have showed up in the game, we, the USGA, but all of the, you know, leaders in the game need to make sure that we fling those doors open and hold them open, and that we bear hug these new people and prove to them that they're absolutely welcomed and wanted in this great game of ours.
Do you think too, Fred, that the adjustment with the handicapping system allowing nine holes to count automatically helps?
Yeah. Well, we're doing all of these little things in response to who showed up.
Right.
And we know that if you look in our gin system, women tend to play nine holes more than 18. Young people who are new to the game tend to play nine more than 18. We know that we need to make golf accessible, and we need to actually reframe what it looks like to play golf. Look, I belong to a few serious golf clubs, ones where you leave your phone in the car. I love that kind of golf. It's like going to formal Sunday church. You know, the Anglican in me is about to come out now. There's a time when you want to go to mass and you got to dress up and you got to put your phone down and you got to wear your tie, and there's time for formal
church. You're listening
church.
To the huge pipe organ.
Yeah. But then, you know, I like going to casual church too, when the community church and we got a rock band and we're wearing jeans and we're drinking our Starbucks. There's no one way to go to church and experience your faith, and there should be not one way to enjoy golf. Sometimes we need to make room for casual golf. Sometimes we need to make room for offsite golf. Those of us who love the game need to be open and welcoming to all forms of the game. But we don't need to patronize people either. We need to show the folks playing golf at Top Golf that the journey and going on this golf journey is going to be good for them, and that there are values that you learn going on the journey, and that formal golf at times will teach them some things that casual golf will not. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to be patronizing to just sort of leave them there. And so I always say, look, I have lived the golf life in every form. And I am passionate about helping people understand that at every point in the game, this game is going to be better for your life. And so, yeah, golf is in a great space. And I'm talking about the overall game. And we need to make sure that we keep investing in the things that will keep golf in a great space. And don't rest on the fact that these folks showed up during COVID. We need to make sure we're making the investments to keep them in the game and to continue to, you know, sort of cascade out why this game is good for you.
What's next for the USGA?
Well, you know, I think, look, we, you know, when we think about the horizon for the USGA, we think about, you know, continuing to improve our championships. At the core of the USGA is governance, i.e. we set the rules and also the rules around handicapping and equipment standards along with the RNA. And then we conduct 15 national championships. And we feel like conducting the national championships well gives us the credibility to govern. We also feel like the goodness that comes through inspiring all golfers through our championships also gives us a lot of credibility. So we continue to look at ways to be better at our championships, to include more people and more sites and to move them around. I think you'll see a lot of energy around that. We certainly have to get through our equipment, issues and make sure that we land in a good spot there. And then I think for me, you know, it's about making the investments down into the grassroots and the community of the game. And I think that's probably with our foundation, something that is fairly new in terms of the intentionality around that. And that's probably in addition to the core things that the USGA does, the USGA and our foundation and how we can contribute back into the game, making it more accessible for more people is probably on the horizon as something that is new, newer in terms of our core mission.
You spoke previously about the first tee in a previous episode about the first tee at Trinity Forest. How important is it to the game of golf that the first tee is around?
Yeah, well, we've been an original supporter of the first tee at the USGA, and we love our relationship there. I come at it two ways because at Trinity Forest, we also love our relationship with the first tee of Dallas. And I would encourage all your listeners, those who are passionate about golf, you know, imagine if every golfer just took one kid and showed him, you know, what the benefits of the game would be like and was not willing to just give their dollars but give a little of their time. I mean, imagine what that would do not only for the game, but imagine what that does for our cities. Imagine what Little Rock becomes if every golfer took one kid and just mentored and helped one kid along. This is how our cities will be better. This is how our country will be better. I always say I have been around it all. I was a associate professor at a university. I have served on the altar of my church. I have been members of a lot of things. I've dabbled with special interests and helping in public policy. I know of nothing in this country that brings people together the way golf does. And when we want to see our future as a more connected city and a more connected society, the game of golf offers us a platform and an opportunity to do the very thing that at times as Americans we struggle to do. And so for me, the future of golf has to be a more connected game, one more connected to the places we play the game. And as I like to say to my friends at the Elite Club, what's good behind these gates have to be good for what's outside of these gates. And when the two things come together, it's magical. And that's what the first tee has given us an opportunity to do at Trinity Forest, to make sure that we actually enjoy the goodness inside, but we share that goodness back outside into the community.
Looking around your office, I see a couple of pictures of you with the United States Amateur Championship trophy, obviously. Yep. What's it like when you're there on that final Sunday to be the guy that gets up there and gets to present that, obviously the other championship trophies that the USGA presents?
Yeah, you know, it's for me it's special because growing up as a competitive athlete, like I know what it's like to be in the arena. I never competed for a, you know, national golf championship, but I have competed in national, you know, championships in basketball. And, you know, when the athletes are in the zone, you know, one of the things I always say to new executive committee members, you know, don't, this is not your time to chit chat with the athletes. They are in the zone. They are in the arena. You know, this is your time to sort of give them a head nod, tip the cap, get out of their way, stay out of their way. You know, this is not the time to sort of build any relationships. This is our time to create the platform and the forum for competition, because competition brings out the best in us. Competition allows us to see the best of humankind. But when it's all said and done, and it's time to celebrate how the war was won, it is really special to do two things. One, to shake the hand of the runner-up, because even though they were not the champion, they were a champion. And then to hand a trophy off, it's a life-changing event. It is a obituary moment in that person's life, whether they know it or not.
You're right.
And wow. To be able to hand that off and to get out of the way and to let them celebrate and enjoy the stage, it's very special. And it's hard not to feel like you have been blessed to actually have the opportunity to do those kind of things.
And you get to do it at some amazing facilities as well. All right, couple last questions for you. Best golf course you've ever played?
Well, no. That's like that's like choosing between your children. You know? I don't do that, and I won't.
That's a political answer.
No, I don't do that, and I will never do that because, again, I think you know it's difficult to disconnect the golf course, the golf environment, and the people you're with. And let's just say I happen, you know, as a USGA president, to have reason to be at all the great places in golf, and they're all unique and they're all special in their own way. We're not a rating agency, but all you have to know about how I think about golf, how we think about golf, is just look at the places we're conducting championships. Those are the places we think are the most special. We have the honor and really the privilege. We've been trusted by a number of great clubs to actually be the stewards of their course, and you know, so that's how I feel about the great places in golf. And whether I'm walking through, you know, the doors of Club A versus Club B, they're all very special to us.
All right, fantasy foursome, living or deceased, you and three others that you could play a round of golf with, who would it be?
Very easy, Tiger Woods, because I would not be interested in this game if there were no Tiger Woods. Sometimes, and this is something that I feel very special about, and thank you for not going deep down this rabbit hole, but as a person of color, he was the first person of color that I saw playing golf at that level, and he played it at a level it probably has never been played, but it also made me feel like I could exist in the game of golf. So you know, I'd want to take Tiger out there. My dad is not a serious golfer, but it's hard to imagine my life without having the, you know, blessing of being born, you know, his son, because we stand under trees that we didn't plant. And so we got to plant some other trees for those coming behind us to stand under. So my dad's going to be in that foursome. And I think I would stop right there. I think my
just
foursome
make it a threesome.
Would be a threesome.
Yeah.
You know, I actually had the opportunity to introduce Tiger. Probably would never remember this, but we were sitting at our club in the Bahamas, and my this is a cool Tiger moment. He probably didn't remember this, but I brought my dad up as, you know, son done well, and we were sitting in the dining room, and Tiger walks in with his foursome, and my dad was like in amazement, jaw dropped, and I think Tiger could sense that. He got up from his table, came over, shook my dad's hand. That was a very special moment. I just feel like this game gives us some really cool moments, and yeah, that's it. I've got so many great mentors that filling out the foursome would not be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, you just touched me there. I mean, golf has given me so much in my life. In fact, being able to sit here with the president of the United States Golf Association and have a conversation has been just fantastic, and I appreciate the time you've given me. So you wouldn't give me your best golf course, but if there's only one more time you get to play a round of golf on this planet, where would it be?
Well, let me just say this. This is your way of getting at where's my favorite place
in
golf.
No, not necessarily.
But I want to disconnect those things because, look, I've got a few places in golf that are really special to me, and I really don't want to sort of snob the audiences with some of the places I get to play golf, but let me just say this. If I got one last round, I have to go back to where my real serious golf started, and that's at Trinity Forest, because what it's meant to my story and who I got to actually, you know, start with. And I think, you know, one of the things about, you know, living the elevator life, and I would say by any stretch of the imagination, those of us that get to do what you and I get to do and what so many others in the game, we've lived the elevator life. In my case, I grew up in an inner city neighborhood. Someone put me in the elevator and they hit penthouse. And there's an old African proverb that goes something like this. When someone puts you in the elevator and takes you up to the penthouse, when you walk out, always hit the ground floor so that the elevator goes back down and gets someone else. And so where my golf game started was at Trinity Forest, where my real golf life started, where living the golf life started, was at this wonderful place that we created that we hope will be around for centuries to inspire more good golf in North Texas, which is where I live, the place that made me. And so I'd have to go back to where it all started for me. And I want to just say thank you. Thank you for everything you're doing to showcase this game, to actually showcase the values and the personalities in the game, to actually inspire people, not only in their game and in their athletic endeavors, but in their life. And we know that everything will get better in our life when we live our life more fully. And that's what golf has meant to me. And I hope that came through to your listeners today.
I hope it did too. And I no doubt think that it did. Mr. Papal, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels on the web at bphotels.com.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass. I want to thank Mr. Fred Papal for his time. I spent a little over an hour with him in Dallas at the Beck Group in his office a couple of weeks ago, and I thought that these last two episodes just turned out fantastic, and you can tell what an engaging man and businessman he is, and he is the right guy that is leading the United States Golf Association as the president of the USGA. Speaking of the USGA, some of their upcoming championships this year, the U.S. Women's Open will be played May 30th through June 3rd at Lancaster Country Club in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. The U.S. Open will be played June 13th through the 16th at Pinehurst Resort and Country Club, the number two course there at the Village of Pinehurst in North Carolina. The U.S. Women's Amateur will be over in Tulsa, Oklahoma at Southern Hills Country Club August 5th through 11th. The United States Amateur will be August 12th through 18th at Hazeltine National Golf Club in Shaska, Minnesota. The U.S. Senior Am will be at the Honors Course over in Ooltewah, Tennessee. The U.S. Seniors Women's Open will be August 1st through 4th at Fox Chapel Golf Club in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The U.S. Senior Open will be played June 27th through 30th at Newport Country Club in Newport, Rhode Island. And the U.S. Senior Women's Amateur will be played September 21st through the 26th at Broadmoor Golf Club in Seattle, Washington. That will do it for this edition of From the Shortgrass. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you will listen again. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon from the Shortgrass.
You've been listening to From the Shortgrass, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network.